Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Then he drops him. He sacks him. Super Mario gets in on the sack party.
Yeah! Let's go, Buffalo!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Ball into the end zone. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Aaron Williams made a leaping interception in the end zone.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Coming up on the show tonight, we're going to talk more about offensive linemen, right tackles versus left tackles in the first round. We'll talk with one of the Bills' all-time left tackles, Will Wolford, at 7:30. And at 8 o'clock, rules changes in the works in the NFL. Ben Ostro of FootballZebras.com joins us to break them down.
This place is pandemonium!
Finds a crease up the middle, dodges a man at the 5, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to One Bills Drive. Welcome to Orchard Park. It's another edition of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO this Thursday night. Live from Orchard Park, live from Buffalo, New York. Happy to have you in the audience tonight. Another cold, wintry night on March 20th. Can you believe that? I know everybody's talking about basketball. It's that time of the year. The tournament is underway. We've got tournament fever here in Buffalo. But we are going to talk some football tonight over the next hour and a half. We break off at 8:30 tonight because the Sabres will take over on our flagship here in Buffalo, Sabres and Oilers. So an hour and a half of football talk, and we welcome you to join us. The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You're going to talk about rules changes tonight, so phone in your thoughts and comments on that. But again, I know everybody's all about the hoops. I was down there today, down at First Niagara Center, saw a great win by the Dayton Flyers over Ohio State, and Syracuse rolled. Just a great atmosphere down there. More games coming up tonight, so you can take a break if you want to from the hoops and talk a little football with us tonight. Yep, I was down there. Good day down there. Paid $40 to park today. Can you believe that? $40. Same place I parked for a Sabres game a couple of weeks ago where I paid it $15 or $20, worth twice as much today. Congratulations to Mark Croce and his group. Really doing a good service to all the visitors from out of town. $40 to park. It's a $20 parking spot during a hockey game. Wow. Good for you. Boy, that's the business to be in, I guess. Just knock people over the head and take their money. But other than that, a great atmosphere down at First Niagara Center today. And we're going to talk about football tonight. Going to talk about rules changes. Next week, we are going to the NFL owners meetings. We'll be broadcasting live from there next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Tuesday actually podcast because of hockey. But live radio shows Monday and Wednesday. All kinds of coverage on BuffaloBills.com. Make sure you tune in for that next week. One of the big reasons we're going is to keep track on the rules changes proposed by the NFL Competition Committee. There are a number of interesting things on the table this year, and they will vote on that. The owners will, on Wednesday of next week, will be there for that. If you have thoughts on some of the changes, the phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A number of interesting proposals on the table from the Rules Committee. We heard some of it. We're going to talk about that tonight. They're talking about, among other things, changing extra points, and you've heard about this. We've talked about this on the show. They're talking about the proposal that would move the extra point line for kicks back to the 20-yard line, which is, you know, actually I think the Patriots wanted to move it back to the 25-yard line. But they're talking, the Rules Committee wants to move it to the 20-yard line, so it would be a 38-yard kick for an extra point rather than a 20-yard kick. There are other proposals out there for extra points. There's the seven touchdowns when you get in, there are 7 points when you get a touchdown, and then if you want to go for two, you can go ahead and do that. That's one out there. People are talking about narrowing the goalposts for kicks for an extra point. That's out there. Maybe you have some thoughts on extra points. Is it a problem worth addressing at all? Maybe you should just leave it alone. I mean, the game has never been more popular. But there is a move afoot to change extra points. It is no question a boring play, what's the conversion rate? Like 99% of extra point attempts are good. So it's really automatic when you kick an extra point. And there's some discussion about changing that. Maybe you have a better idea, or maybe you have a thought on some of the proposals, including moving the line back to the 20-yard line. That would definitely make it a different sort of kick, a 43-yard kick for an extra point as opposed to or a 38-yard kick for an extra point as opposed to a 20-yard kick. But give us a call on that if you have thoughts on that, 803-0550, the number. They're talking. There is a proposal to move the kickoff line to the 40-yard line, a player safety consideration, resulting in more touchbacks, fewer returns, fewer collisions. In recent years, the league identified kickoffs as some of the most dangerous plays in the game of football. So that is out there. There is, what else? There's talk about use of racial slurs, the N-word. We talked about that with Harry Carson about a week and a half or so ago on this show, about the rules people will tell you those rules are already in place. But that still is out there. There's talk about expansion of the playoffs, maybe adding one more team in each conference so that there'd just be one team in each conference to get the bye in the first week. You'd have six teams from each conference playing in the wild card round. Three winners, add the team with the bye. You go to the divisional round with four teams at that point. That's out there on the table. A lot of different rules changes out there. We want to know how you feel about them. Going to talk with Ben Ostro of footballzebras.com about this at 8 o'clock. But if you have thoughts on that, the phone lines are open. 803-0550, the number, or toll free, 1-888-550-2550. What about expansion of playoffs? You know, adding an extra team in each conference. It's a way to generate new television revenue, and to me, it is a way to avoid the 18-game regular season, which has been proposed by the commissioner and others. So I wouldn't mind that. Does it dilute the making the playoffs? Yeah, it does, a little bit. You'd have teams, you know, almost guaranteed to make it with nine wins instead of being on the playoff bubble. What about expansion of playoffs, though, adding one team per conference? Rich McKay is the chairman of the competition committee, the former general manager of the Tampa Bay Bucks. And Rich McKay, in a conference call yesterday, says the competition committee supports expanding the playoffs, but it is not part of their actual proposal.
With respect to expansion of the playoffs, like last year, in last year's report, if you went back and looked at it, you would see we took a position on expanded playoffs. And we supported expanded playoffs. We have likewise gone back and looked at that position, rewritten that position, and put it in the back of the book. I wouldn't want to give it to you verbatim or where we stand with respect to it, although I think last year's might give you an indication. But it will be distributed to the members on Monday.
So that is going to be discussed next week, expanding the playoffs. And that's going to be interesting to watch. I do think it's a way to generate more income from television, you know, an extra playoff game for television. And if it averts going to the 18-game regular season, I am all for it. As you know, the NFL, they've always got to find a way to squeeze as much money as they can out of television, and that would be the way to do it. The proposal to penalize players for use of racial slurs, the N-word. We talked with Harry Carson, the great New York Giants linebacker, the Hall of Famer, about this a couple of weeks ago. The competition committee says they are aware of the push, but they also say there is a rule already in place to handle this. Rich McKay, chairman of the competition committee, talks about that.
The racial slurs, we do have a section in the book that deals with sportsmanship and addresses the use of abusive or threatening or insulting language and emphasizes that it can be a foul for unsportsmanlike conduct. It's right in the rule as written today, which is Rule 12, Section 3, Article 1B. And we emphasize that we empower a foul to be called when appropriate for that type of language. And there'll be, it's a pretty long section. I likewise wouldn't want to try to say for you everything that's written in it, but there's a pretty long section in the book that deals with sportsmanship.
That is Rich McKay talking about the proposal to penalize players for the use of racial slurs, specifically the N-word. Both Rich McKay and Jeff Fisher, St. Louis Rams coach and a member of the competition committee, also had thoughts. And their position on this, and it's not a formal proposal by the competition committee to institute a new penalty. Their position, Rich McKay and Jeff Fisher, on this is that the rule already exists. Here's what Fisher and McKay said to say about it.
We have the current rule. Unsportsmanlike conduct. Rule 12, Section 3, it states, using abusive, threatening, or insulting language or gestures to opponents, teammates, officials, or representatives of the league is unsportsmanlike conduct. So the N-word would fall under that category. The officials will be empowered to call a foul if there's racial slurs, or statements regarding a player's sexual orientation, or even baiting and insulting verbal abuse. So it falls under that, and it's, as Rich said earlier, it's going to be a very significant point of emphasis.
But I think to your latter point, too, is that, you know, we will take the time, Dean Blandino and his office and with Troy's input, we will take the time to make sure we educate the players, the coaches, officials, media, everyone, that of how the rule will be enforced this year, so that it's very clear as to how it will be, and that'll be done in the spring when the officiating department goes on the road to see all the clubs.
That is Rich McKay, and before him, Jeff Fisher, both of them members of the competition committee. McKay is the chairman of the competition committee. They believe that there seems to be a need for a new rule to penalize use of racial slurs, the N-word in particular. You can imagine, and I think we're going to see this, and we talked with Harry Carson about this 2 weeks ago. I would think that they're going to stress it as a point of emphasis for officials on the field to use the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty to penalize players if they hear that word. I think that's the way to go. I don't know if you want to create a new rule specifically dealing with that word, or actually any word in particular. I think it does fall under the purview of unsportsmanlike conduct, and I think that's probably the way to do it. That's the way the competition committee is going to recommend to the owners next week. I would think that's the way it's going to go, but it will be discussed next week when the owners meet. If you have thoughts on that or any other owners or any other rules changes, the phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And finally, the proposal to move the extra point line back to the 20-yard line from the 2. That's been debated a lot. We talked with Garrison Sanborn about that a couple of weeks ago on the show, the Bills long snapper. Commissioner Roger Goodell says the extra points are so automatic, something has to change. The Patriots want to move it to the 25-yard line, which would make it a 43-yard extra point try, but leaving it at the 2-yard line for a 2-point conversion. And all of these scenarios, by the way, for changing the extra point, all of them say that if you want to go for 2, you do it from the 2-yard line. There's no discussion about anything like that. If you want to go for 2 points, you do it from the 2. But the competition committee is going to recommend that the line be moved back to the 20-yard line so that it's a 38-yard kick rather than a 20-yard kick for the extra point. Here is Jeff Fisher, a member of the NFL Competition Committee.
We're going to propose this weekend the membership that we move in the preseason, in one of the preseason weeks, that we move the extra point back to the 20-yard line and see how that goes. So, yeah, it's it's on our radar, but we did, obviously, as you know, we didn't do anything specific with respect to a proposal.
Yeah, it's an important distinction, and I missed that. I heard it yesterday, and I do recall that they're talking about a one-week trial in preseason. In other words, in preseason week number 2, say, or number 3 this year, that rule would be in place, that you could kick from that everybody would have to kick from the 20-yard line as opposed to the 2-yard line to get the 1 point on the extra point. I think that's probably a good way to do it. They are not proposing that. They're going to propose a 1-week trial period during preseason this year. And I think that's probably the best way to do it, sort of dipping your toe into changing the extra points, because it is a significant change, I would think. Going to make a big difference, I would think, in terms of what teams do after a touchdown. There are other proposals out there. The New England Patriots have suggested the kickoff line move to the 40. We talked about that. Expanded instant replay to include personal fouls. Elimination of overtime in preseason. Who would not be for that, right? The Patriots want to extend the goalpost 5 additional feet above the crossbar. I guess just for more clarity when they kick a kick through the goalposts. Here's a good one. Installing fixed cameras on all boundary lines to improve instant replay. What a great idea that is. If you could eliminate the inherent unfairness of having different number of cameras for different games and having stationary cameras on all boundary lines to just look at out of bounds and touchdowns. That's all you need. That's where really many of the instant replay calls come, and have it standard throughout the league so that you don't have a chance for a better call, say, in a Sunday night game than you would in a Sunday afternoon game at 1 o'clock. I think that would be a great idea. Allowing coaches to use the replay challenge on a bigger variety of plays. That's going to be discussed. In fact, apparently the Canadian Football League is talking about that, allowing coaches replay challenges on a wide variety of plays. I don't think the league is going to go for that, and I don't think the competition committee, based on what I heard yesterday on the conference call, is up for that either. They do not want to see widespread expansion of instant replay, and I'm all for that too. A couple of other minor tweaks. It's taking away the stoppage of a clock on a sack. I think that's a good idea. I think this is, I think, one of the best ideas, too, for instant replay, allowing the game official, the guy on field, to be in direct contact with a central command center, a league central command center, essentially Dean Blandino and his crew in New York, during replay challenges. Can you imagine that? Replay challenge, the referee goes under the hood, and while he's there looking at the play, he also has in his ear Central Command in New York City, Dean Blandino, helping him out. Do they make the call there? Probably not, but at least helping him out as they look at the replay challenge. I think it's a step in the right direction, a step maybe more towards what the NHL does with their centralized replays in Toronto. I think it'd be a good idea. There are bylaws changes coming up next week that the owners are going to look at, including a proposal to increase the game day roster from 46 to 49 for regular season games played on days other than Sunday, Monday, or the season opening weekend. More players on a Thursday night game, for instance. I guess so. I mean, I guess I see what the rationale is. Allowing trades prior to the start of the league year. Eliminate the cut to 75 players in preseason. And only make one roster cut to 53 just before the start of the regular season. I don't have a problem with that. Here's a big one, I think an important one. Permitting more than one player to return from injured reserve after at least 6 weeks on injured reserve. Now we have the one designated for return player when they go to IR. Years ago, 30 years ago, teams were known to stash players on IR for the first third or two-thirds of the season and knowing that they'd be healthy and knowing they could bring him back. That might occur again if you allow more than one player to come back on IR. A wide variety of proposals that are out there. We're going to talk about them all with Ben Ostro of FootballZebras.com at 8 o'clock tonight. But we'd like to hear from you if you have thoughts on any of these or something you'd like to see changed in NFL rules. Next week's the week when we're down there at the owners meeting in Orlando. Next week's the week that they are going to talk about many of these issues. And if you have thoughts on that, the lines are open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter as well at John Murphy Show. Any thoughts at all on any of these rules changes? I think there's some interesting ideas there. I really do. A couple of NFL notes tonight, and this one just came in a little while ago. Ryan Fitzpatrick, former Bills quarterback, has a new home in the NFL. He's going to sign with the Houston Texans. That's the word about 45 minutes ago. It was Fitzpatrick's first official visit to another team since he was released by the Tennessee Titans last week. Titans went with Wally Whitehurst as their backup, and Fitz got a new job with the Houston Texans. New Texans coach Bill O'Brien revamping the entire quarterback room. The Texans are believed to be in the market for a rookie quarterback, drafting a rookie quarterback this year. They'd love to trade Matt Schaub. He has a $10 million cap figure, which makes that problematical. But I think they're putting Fitzpatrick in place to be the placeholder while a young passer is groomed there in Houston. Ryan Fitzpatrick, who started 9 games for the Tennessee Titans last year, 77 career starts, most of them here with the Buffalo Bills, is going to get a chance to play and run the offense for a little bit anyway with the Houston Texans until they are ready to play their rookie quarterback. So good for him. Mark Sanchez is going to be out there soon, too. I don't know if you heard Eric Allen on our show last night from NewYorkJets.com. Mark Sanchez has a big roster bonus coming up, I believe, tomorrow, next week, and he's not going to see it. They are very likely to release Mark Sanchez, so another veteran quarterback name who will be out there shortly. One of the names talked about as a potential first-round draft pick for the Bills is offensive lineman Taylor Lewan, offensive tackle from the University of Michigan. Well, Lewan has been charged with one count of aggravated assault and 2 counts of assault or assault and battery. It all goes back to an incident on December 1st last year. Lewan, who is projected as one of the top 3 tackles in the draft, will be arraigned April 8th in Ann Arbor, Michigan. According to the Ann Arbor newspaper, Lewan's being investigated for his role in an incident that took place in Ann Arbor on December 1st following Michigan's loss to Ohio State. 2 Ohio State fans said they were assaulted in the incident. Last week, we were standing right there when Lewan was asked about it at the Combine. He denied being involved at all. His quote last month at the Combine was, I went over the Ohio State incident once before. I wasn't in any fight of any kind. I was actually breaking something up, and some guy said that I slugged him, but that's not who I am off the field. That's not the kind of person I am. The charges filed in district court in Ann Arbor yesterday. Lawan, the only person charged in the incident, if found guilty, he could face up to 93 days in jail or a fine of up to $500. Taylor Lawan, 22 years of age, started 48 games at left tackle for Michigan, the Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year for the last two seasons, and he faces charges of aggravated assault and two counts of assault and battery in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Jared Allen, one of the hot names on the free agent market these days. Well, he was in Seattle, but he did not get a deal from Seattle yet. In fact, he left the Seahawks after making his second visit to Seattle. The Seahawks said that Allen returned to his home in Arizona without finalizing a contract. In a text message later today, Allen said, "We're heading home. We'll consider their offer, and he'll make his decision this weekend." Sources describe the Seahawks and Allen as working on the final details of a contract that could be signed any day now. His agent, Jared Allen's agent, says he has more than just one offer to deliberate, but it looks pretty likely that Jared Allen is going to wind up with the Seattle Seahawks. So you're caught up on the NFL news, and the big NFL news is coming up next week. We'll be there at the NFL meetings in Orlando, Florida, broadcasting live and on Monday and Wednesday, and, of course, coverage on BuffaloBills.com with rules changes on the agenda. We're going to talk with Ben Ostro of FootballZebras.com about rules changes when he joins us tonight at 8 o'clock. Hey, have you checked out Bill's Bracketology yet? Everybody's checking out their brackets today with the first round of the NCAA tournament. Bill's Bracketology is up right now at BuffaloBills.com, and it matches 16 current and former players in a social media showdown. The idea is to name the most engaging Twitter account among these Buffalo Bills. They've been seeded. You can go to BuffaloBills.com to vote. You jump on Twitter and simply tweet at the player that you want to win. And they're going to tally up how many mentions each Bill gets, announce the winners of each round. This round ends later today. The champion of Bills Bracketology takes over the Bills Twitter account at Buffalo Bills. Good matchups in the first round. Stevie Johnson versus Kiko Alonso. Mario Williams versus Marcel Darius. E.J. Manuel against Andre Reed. Thurman Thomas against Marquise Goodwin. It is Fred Jackson against Robert Woods. C.J. Spiller goes up against T.J. Graham. Stephon Gilmore goes up against Aaron Williams, and Brandon Spikes goes up against Eric Wood. 16 Bills players, present and former, and you can vote. Just go to Twitter and vote for the best one. Bills Bracketology, it's up right now at BuffaloBills.com if you want to check that out. We spent a lot of time last night talking about right tackle. Would you use that ninth overall pick on a right tackle? Way back in 1987, the Bills used a first-round pick on a tackle who came in and played left tackle and really anchored the position for the Bills for a long, long time. Will Wolford was his name, and he's going to be joining us next when we return. Will Wolford, the former Bills offensive lineman, we'll talk with him about the state of left tackle, the state of offensive line play in the NFL, and what he's up to right now. He's coming up next. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive. Here until 8:30, about one more hour to go. Sabres hockey coming up on our flagship in Buffalo at 8:30 tonight. Well, we talked about it yesterday a lot. Right tackle, left tackle. Chris Brown's got a piece up called On the Clock. It's part of his On the Clock series leading up to the draft on May 8th. Rise of the right tackle. About the difference between right tackles and left tackles, and is it diminishing now in the NFL? Who better to talk to than a guy who manned the left tackle spot for the Buffalo Bills for 7 years, a former first-round draft pick of the Bills. He spent 13 years in the NFL and made it to three Pro Bowls, and he's on the line with us from his home in Louisville, Kentucky tonight. Will Wolford is with us. Will, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Hey, did I read this correctly on Twitter? Do you have two daughters at the University of Dayton?
I do.
Oh, I was there. I was at the game here in Buffalo today. What a great showing by the Flyers.
Great. Yeah, and I also mentioned that I picked Ohio State in my bracket, so I'm out of the billion or million dollar challenge, that's for sure.
Well, that's good for you. Most of us are going to be out of that shortly. Yeah, I picked Dayton, as a matter of fact, in that game. I don't know where I came up with. Hey, Will, thanks very much for doing this with us. We were thinking about this debate that we had on the show the last few nights about right tackle, left tackle. When you came into the league with the Bills, first round 1986, there was no question that left tackles were the preeminent position on that offensive line, right? And it pretty much stayed that way through your career.
I mean, yes and no. They weren't really paid that much more until free agency hit. And then when free agency hit, really all offensive linemen's values went way up. It used to be the quarterback and then everybody else. And when free agency came around, no doubt the left tackle position kind of spiked in pay, but they've all kind of spiked in pay from what I can tell.
Well, when you played late 80s into deep into the 90s, were most defenses premier pass rushers coming off the left side of the offense, right side of the defense?
I really think that was the design, yes, especially as I played, the game became more specialized. My first couple years in the league, especially against a 3-4 defense, I would see the same defensive lineman, you know, every play of the game. And by the end of my career, I would see three different defensive linemen in three different plays. It was, again, especially in the passing downs, most teams put their best pass rushers on that side.
And it changed, right? And I know you just came off a long stint as the color announcer on the Indianapolis Colts radio network. It changed more and more in the recent years in the NFL, right? Now pass rushers come from all sides.
I think they concentrate on a more balanced attack for sure. But I still think if a team has one standout pass rusher, they still usually put them on the quarterback's blind side.
What does that mean as far as, and what have you seen when you watch the NFL? And as I said, you watched it closely during your stint with the Colts. What does that mean as far as the difference between left tackles and right tackles? Do you see the gap narrowing in terms of talent, in terms of compensation, in terms of emphasis, do you think?
I'm not really sure. It seems to me that left tackles are still a little bit more athletic because they're probably going to take on a little bit more athletic pass rusher. Right tackles can be a much bigger, stronger player. It seems like most teams in their running attack are still more right-handed than left-handed as far as which side of the ball they're going to hit first. I think people try to be as balanced as possible, and maybe with a lot of self-scouting, they make sure that their run pass is 50%, their run left-right is 50%, their run inside-outside is 50%. So maybe they are trying to balance things up, which would bode to your theory. But it sure seems to me that most right tackles are still much bigger, stronger guys, and left tackles are probably still a little bit more athletic, again, just because the players are probably going to face.
When you look at an offensive line, Will, are there some positions that are more critical than others, left tackle, center maybe, or is there one position that maybe means the most on that five-man group?
I think they're all important. Continuity is extremely important. If you can keep the guys healthy and get them used to playing with each other, wow, they can get really good really quick just because of the language and terminology and being on the same page. But if you're going to point, you need a center, and you need a center who's there every single play, and he needs to be above average. And then I think the next two positions, you definitely need your tackles the same way.
We're with Will Wolford, the former Bills left tackle, who's on the line with us now talking about offensive line play. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. The reason we're talking a lot about this, Will, is because many of us are starting to think the Bills are going to be in the market for a tackle when the draft comes up on May 8th this year, and they have a pretty good left tackle now in Cordy Glenn out of Georgia going into his third year. Wondering if they could spend the 9th overall pick on a right tackle. What do you think? Is that too early to draft a guy who's going to come in and play right tackle from what you know of the NFL?
No, but then again, maybe they can trade it and fall back and still catch one. I do think they need to go ahead and invest in the offensive line with an early pick. I do like Buffalo's offensive line. I think one more player, especially the tackle position, can put them in, you know, top 5-10 lines in the league. I think they're almost there anyway. And it really starts inside out. I think Eric Wood is an excellent football player. I think he's underrated. It's only a matter of time before he stays healthy and continues his career. I mean, he's on a Ken Hall type path. He's a smart football player, and he's a really good one. And you're right about Glenn, the left tackle. He's very talented, and he does a nice job. I think across the board, they have a very much an above-average offensive line, and hopefully this year they get to showcase it.
Well, it sounds like you pay a lot of attention to the Buffalo Bills, where you spent 7 of your 13 years in the league. Is that true?
Well, I got to come back to a game this year because I gave up the Colts gig because I'm coaching high school football. So at the end of the year, I was able to come up and watch a game. But anytime I can catch them on TV, I watch them for sure. Even though I worked for the Colts for many years, I lived in Buffalo 7 years year-round. Was married for 5 of them. And, you know, I love my time in Western New York, which one thing that was so consistent in my career is anytime an old guy came back or an old coach came back and they talked about Western New York, everybody loves it. and I was no different. So there's no doubt I keep up with the team.
Will Wolford, our guest, former Bills tackle. Will, talking about when we talk about the Bills possibly drafting a tackle in the first round, you made that transition, obviously, in 1986. And to my recollection, you pretty much started right away. It was basically plug and play for you in 1986 when you got here, wasn't it?
My first year I played guard. And then I remember when Coach Ringo moved me to left tackle, he said, really, you're probably a better guard, but I need a left tackle and you're athletic enough to do it. He goes, and don't worry, you'll make more money. So, and I always felt like a guard playing tackle my entire career because I didn't have, 40-inch arms and 6'7", and which makes it so much easier to pass protect. Because the left tackle, that's all you think about. As soon as the game's over, you think about the next week and who's going to try to hit the quarterback in the back of the head. And when you're playing guard, you don't have to worry about that as much at all.
Well, gee, you may do it.
But after my first year, I moved to left tackle and stayed there.
Yeah, and settled in there. Three Pro Bowl appearances. You made a lot of money and for three different teams. Obviously, Coach Ringo saw something, and it worked to your advantage, right?
No doubt about it. And a lot of times back then, you were facing a Lawrence Taylor or an Andre Tippett or an outside linebacker who was used to just running around big tackle. And, again, I was more athletic having, I was a little bit smaller than probably what tackles are back then. And, I had the quickness to keep up with guys like that. It wasn't until late in my career where guys started running me over after a couple of injuries and surgeries and whatnot that things got really tough. But I was usually pretty quick enough that they couldn't run around me and held up enough that if they tried to run me over, usually the quarterback could get rid of it.
So, John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're talking with former Bills tackle Will Wolford. And, Will, you mentioned how you're coaching high school football now, and you're at your alma mater in Louisville, right, St. Xavier. In fact, I read somewhere where not only were you a product of that big Jesuit high school in Louisville, but your dad was there years ago too, right?
Absolutely. And Louisville, Kentucky, Louisville is a big Catholic town. And the high school that I went to, my father went to, my father-in-law went to it. I had three brother-in-laws who went there, and my brother went to it. Everybody I know went to St. X High School. It's, the incoming freshman class is always just over 400 all-boys Catholic high school, so there's 1,500 boys in the school. And football-wise, there's almost 300 football players, so it's quite an undertaking. But in Louisville, Kentucky, if you ask someone, where did you go to school, they're not talking about college. They're talking about high school. And it won't take long before St. X's name will appear.
Huh. I read a story about your first game this year as a coach up against, Ballard High School. Your offensive line had a rough first half, and you actually cited a game that you played for the Bills in Kansas City. Can you tell that story, Will?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have a center who's a great kid, and he's a very good football player. He'll be a senior this year, but he's a junior, and he's very nervous. And he's very nervous anyway, but he will play college football. He's already 275, and he's a very good center. But he's in the fourth quarter, we're still talking about the game, and he's bringing up plays that he screwed up in the first half. He's apologizing because he's just such a nervous kid. And I'm like, Nathan, relax. I've been there. I said, I gave up three sacks on Monday Night Football. I know what it's like to have a bad player, too. You'll be all right. It gets better. You got to put it behind you and play the next one. That kind of speech. And I don't know if it had any effect with Nathan or not. He's still a very nervous kid, but I work on him every day.
How did the season turn out for you, Will? You made the playoffs with your St. X team, right?
We did. We ended up 7-5. We were playing pretty good football towards the end of the season. There's no doubt the transition from of coaching staffs did not help at all. And for a while, it was very frustrating at the very beginning of the season. But towards the end, I felt pretty good about the coaching staff and myself that we were kind of out of the way and letting the kids play. We happened to lose a playoff game to the best team in Louisville, in which we're losing 20-0 in the fourth quarter. We go no-huddle offense, which I know a little bit about, and we take the lead 21-20 with 50 seconds to go, and sure enough, they kicked the game-winning field goal on us. And it was a tough loss because they're a really talented team, and we weren't supposed to, they blew everybody else out. And we hung in there, but overall, for myself, it was a great year. I mean, there's nothing I'd rather do than coach those kids, and there's too many of them. I mean, last year we had 50-plus seniors and 60 juniors. I mean, it was we were at 113 total players before I even got to the sophomore class, which does not go over real well with parents. There's a whole lot of them, and they don't really understand the team aspect too much in football. They're worried about their son, which, I mean, I certainly get, but it makes it real tough to keep everybody happy when you only have one football.
I'm sure you're good at it. Hey, Will, before we let you go, and it's not a great thing to talk about, but your former teammate, and I'm sure your friend Jim Kelly, as you've heard, has had a recurrence of his cancer. And I know you, like all of us here in Buffalo, are really rooting for Jim and pulling for him in what is another difficult challenge for him to face.
No doubt about it. It hurts my heart when I hear the stories. And I've seen Jim a lot in the last year and a half at different charity events. I saw him when I was back in town, and when I heard the news, you know, I just texted him, and we haven't spoken, but you know he's going to fight it like crazy, and everyone's pulling for him. It just, you know, he's been through a lot. He's had a number of different surgeries, and, you know, he's still relatively a young man. And, I just hate it for him, and certainly wish him the best.
Hey, Will, it's always great to catch up with you. We thank you very much for your insight on offensive line play, and we wish you well in year two at St. Xavier down in Louisville. Thank you very much.
Murph, enjoyed it. Thank you.
Will Wolford, former Bills offensive lineman, talking about offensive line play. Who better to talk about that? And we always appreciate his insight on that. Going to take a break. Come back. We'll get to your phone calls. If you have thoughts on anything you've heard or about some of the rules changes proposed in the NFL, lines will be open. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Will Wolford for joining us tonight, talking about right tackle, left tackle, talking about his career as a high school football coach in Louisville. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO here till 8:30 tonight. Sabres hockey coming up after that. A call here from Medina. Is it Gary? Gary Yee? Who's this?
Gary Yee.
Gary Yee. How are you, Gary Yee?
How's it going? Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, people need to understand. You can have the best quarterback, best receivers, best running backs, the offensive in the NFL, and it'll do you no good if you don't have an offensive line that will block and protect the offensive line for the quarterback for every play. And an extra tenth of a second, you might get your offensive line. It can make all the difference for the average receiver to get open and make that play.
Yeah, you're right. I think people get that, Gary. I think people understand that. We talked a lot last night about should the Bills draft a tackle, a guy who might play right tackle, or get a playmaking wide receiver, and I would say it's fairly well split. A lot of people are okay with drafting an offensive lineman, so I think people get that. Justin in Virginia. Hi, Justin. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. This is my third night on in a row.
Yeah. How you doing, Justin?
Two quick questions. There's a lot of news about LaJuan, you know, bad news.
Yeah.
How do you think that'll affect his draft? And secondly, I know we have that running back from Baylor coming in sometime this week. How soon do you think we'll look at a running back in the draft?
Okay. On LaJuan, I saw we talked about the news today. He's been charged with assault in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was there at the combine 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, when he was asked specifically about that. It happened after the Ohio State-Michigan game, and December 1st it was. At the time, he said, I wasn't in a fight of any kind. He said he was breaking up a fight, yet the police charge him today with one count of aggravated assault, two counts of assault or assault and battery. He was the only one charged. So obviously something happened there, something not good. Does it affect his draft status? I don't think so. I don't think it will. I don't think, you know, he's got some trouble here to deal with, but I don't think it affects his draft status. Certainly when he makes his rounds, I'm sure they've already asked about it actually at the combine and the 15-minute sessions that teams have had with him. I'm sure he was asked about it and he'll get asked about it again. Teams will check it out and make sure there's not a pattern there, but I don't think it affects his draft status really. Here is James in Chicago. Hello, James. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Murph. How's it going?
Great.
Hey, I just want to talk about the pending new rule change with the instant replay and the officials possibly going to, you know, New York to review the replay while they're under the booth.
Uh-huh.
And I really like how the NHL does it, where, you know, they kind of just go up to, you know, the quote-unquote war room in Toronto And, you know, I'm a huge fan of football, but there are just some times, like, you know, I remember when the instant replay was starting to become popular, you know, they said, oh, it's only going to take 60 seconds. And now there are times where, you know, it's going right to a commercial break. And, I mean, it's taking 4 or 5 minutes sometimes to make, you know, what seems to be some of the simplest calls. And if they just kind of reduce the time by just, you know, having someone on the sidelines and just going to, let's just say, New York and saying, hey, this is a good or bad call, and just, you know, make the call real quick instead of,
yeah,
you know, 3-4 minutes down the line.
Yeah, I agree with you on the need to expedite the calls. It drives me crazy when they don't. It concerns me a little bit. We're going to talk with Ben Ostro about this in the next half hour here, that it might slow it down if they got to go to New York especially if they adopt this rule. It sounds sort of informal. They said that the they don't call it a war room, but the supervisors in New York will consult with the on-field official. The issue is going to be, well, who has the call here? Who made the call? Did they make it in New York? I'm sure the league will tell us no. The call was made by the on-field official in consultation with the people in New York. As you know, in the NHL, it's different. In the NHL, they tell you goal or no goal. And it's, I believe, strictly a no goal or no goal situation in the NHL. I've mentioned this before. I actually was in the so-called war room in Toronto a couple of years ago doing a story for Channel 4 here in Buffalo. They let us right in on a hockey night, watched a shoot video, watched how they work. A team of, at that night, I think there were 4 or 6 guys each watching an individual game with one supervisor. Very efficient. Work like clockwork. They seem to get the calls correctly without much delay. Can the NFL pull that off? I think the technology is there. Does the NFL want to take that step into having an unseen eye in the sky making calls for the folks here in Buffalo or the folks in San Diego or the folks in Seattle? That's kind of a philosophical approach, which I think is going to be different than what the league is used to. All of these issues, this one in particular, I think is fascinating. And we're going to talk with Ben Ostro. His website is footballzebras.com. He pays close attention to officiating issues like this, and he's going to be joining us live on the line in the next half hour. We have one more half hour to go. Sabres hockey coming up at 8:30 on our flagship here in Buffalo, the Sabres and the Oilers. So we've got one more half hour to go after the top of the hour break. Stick around. You can phone in your comments and questions for Ben when we return. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Hour two is going to be an abbreviated hour with hockey coming up at the bottom of the hour. We've been talking a lot tonight about rules changes, proposals for rules changes. We're going to be there at the NFL owners meetings in Orlando, Florida next week with live radio shows on Monday and Wednesday and podcast on Tuesday and all sorts of coverage on BuffaloBills.com. And one of the main issues we'll be covering are rules changes. We'll talk to the Bills decision makers about some of those proposals. And, of course, we'll be there for the commissioner's news conference. We'll be there when they announce what rules are being changed. But you may want to weigh in on some of these proposals. We've talked about them a lot. Phone lines are open if you have thoughts. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. One thoughtful observer of NFL officiating is on the line with us now. He's been a frequent guest on the show. We never seem to give him enough time. I always laugh because whenever we sign off from Ben Ostro, I think, oh, man, we should have budgeted more time. I think we have enough time with us with Ben tonight. He is the man behind the website, footballzebras.com. He joins us live on the line, Ben Ostro. Ben, thank you for being with us tonight. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'll talk a lot faster.
That's probably my fault. I probably talk too much. Overall, your thoughts on, well, no, I don't want to do it that way. Let me do it this way. Let's break down some of these rules changes. I know you follow this stuff very closely on the website, footballzebras.com. And the one thing that strikes me, and maybe in some ways I think the most important thing on the agenda would be using like an eye in the sky, a super official in New York, to consult with on-field officials when it comes to instant replays. Ben, what do you think of that? And philosophically, what are we saying about NFL officiating and replay reviews with that?
Well, we talked about this the last time that I was on, that it looked like they were going to just patch in the command center in New York into the field to boost communication. And so it's just going to be a three-way discussion at this point. Now, that opens it up to whether or not the person in New York, it could be Dean Blandino, it could be Al Riveron, who's his second in command there, or any other designated person in the office. And they could outline that, you know, all right, maybe he makes the ultimate call, or maybe he's just kind of consulting in there and might just kind of weave in and say, hey, did you really consider the knee down at this point of the play, and or in a situation where we don't have a reviewable call, they can shut it down and say, hey, you know, this is not a reviewable call, and return to the field.
You know, two things about this that I want to bring up. One of them is, and a caller last hour brought this up, in terms of expediting replay reviews. In your view, would going to the command center in New York, would that make it a faster review, or maybe would it bog down the process a little bit?
It's possible. I think that there probably would be some growing pains in the first couple of weeks there, that they'll kind of work that out. But you're going to have the command center is already going to have the replays already fed to them before the referee gets under the hood. Of course, the referee is going to delay that a little bit to make sure, because that's when the clock starts. 60 seconds starts as soon as he puts his head under the hood. So he can have little discussion prior to going under the hood just to make sure that that they use the 60 seconds wisely. But in the meantime, the New York office is not limited in that pre-time there. And so you might have a situation where it's like, you know, there's really only one angle. Roll the angle. Let them see it. Make the call.
Ben, what does this do to what I believe has been the league's emphasis over the years of replay? The emphasis has been on having the on-field official, the referee on field, be the guy in charge. If he's got to go and be and consult with the command center in New York, doesn't that open everybody up to suspicions that maybe this call came out of New York?
Well, it's going to be a wait and see. There's nobody's really entirely certain how this is going to pan out. Of course, it's not even passed yet, but you know, we're starting to get little trickles about how this might possibly work. And it just might be that they're going to be in a standoff mode and just kind of audit how the call works, particularly for the first year rolling this out. We had a lot of controversies come up in replay last year. It's thought that you at least make this change. There's an uproar for a change. So we make this change. That gives Dean Blandino a year to push out any drastic changes to the replay system. If we get to the end of the year and there's no big controversy, then there's not going to be any call for a drastic replay in 2015. So I think this is just a little concession to allow someone of the senior staff to just kind of intervene if necessary, but I think they're just going to kind of hold back, which has been the philosophy right back to the 90s, and it's a system that Dean Blandino was involved in from the very beginning. He believes that works, and he'll probably keep it as close to the original as possible.
Live on the line with Ben Ostro. His website, footballzebras.com, deals with the NFL rules and officiating. If you have a comment or a question about officiating or about these proposed rules changes, the phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Hey, Ben, I don't know if you saw the transcript from the conference call yesterday with Rich McKay and Jeff Fisher. I don't know the answer to this question. I don't understand. The Redskins and the Patriots had rules proposals of their own. The competition committee had 6 rules changes or modifications. Do they have different weight? I mean, are the competition committee proposals, those definitely go for a vote? Do you know what the procedure is at the meetings?
From what I understand, well, any team can propose any rule change. It does go to the competition committee, and if there's something that is already on the table as a proposal, they will kind of absorb it into the existing proposal. Or if it's completely different, they'll let it stand on its own. The difference is that when this gets to the owners' meeting, the competition committee is going to talk about their proposals, but it will be up to Washington, it will be up to New England to defend their proposals. They're not going to weigh in on the proposals that are being offered by those teams. So, you know, it's one of these things that they said, okay, we've done a preliminary review, everything's fine, we don't see any fatal flaws in the proposals that you have. So they did pass them on just how they're written and let the owners make the decision ultimately on it. But, yeah, you're going to have the 6 rule changes that the competition committee proposed, and they're probably out of that, I wouldn't be surprised if all 6 went. The other ones that came from the teams, a little dicey.
Here's a rules proposal from the competition committee that seems like a slam dunk to me, Ben. It's, I guess, was it Navarro Bowman from the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, the recovery of a loose ball? They want to change the rule to state that recovery of a loose ball in the field of play is reviewable. That should have no problem being passed, I would think, right?
My sense is it's going to be a slam dunk. There's probably going to be little discussion on it. There were three instances during the season where there was a loose ball recovery under question, and it just seems to be a very simple loophole to close. And, you know, they didn't want to get into well, did they get into a pile? Did they recover it before that? But now it's going to be up to the coach. If he wants to burn a challenge and risk the fact that there's no conclusive recovery, well, he's going to lose the challenge in that case. So it's these clear-cut cases where it's right out in the open that they will call a recovery of a loose ball, much the same as they would in the end zone or on the sideline.
FootballZebras.com, the website. Ben Ostro is the man behind the website. He is live on the line with us. And we're talking about rules changes and even bylaws changes. And our caller on the line has a question about that. Rob in Maryland. Rob, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to ask a quick question about what you think about the playoffs thing they're doing, where they're thinking about expanding the playoffs with adding two more teams to the playoffs.
Yeah, that is obviously not a rules change, but a bylaws change. But I said before last hour, Ben, if I had to choose between adding two regular season games per team or adding one playoff team in each conference, I would absolutely go for that if the goal is to maximize revenue and create more TV inventory. You have a position on that, Ben?
Well, if there's more money to be made, you know that it's a plan that's on the table and it's their attention. But the number seven seed actually did not come out of the competition committee. They had nothing to add plus or minus on that. I am aware, though, that that's part of a separate packet that's going to the owners for consideration at the meeting. So there's really no line on it from the competition committee as far as whether or not they think that it's diluting the field or not. But there is some interest, as you say. It puts an extra game out there. It makes the home field advantage, what we used to consider the one seed was just home field advantage. That would be the only team that gets a bye because now the number two is going to have to play wild card weekend against the number seven. So it's out there. You got a crowded weekend as well. There's a lot of things to work out. I wouldn't be surprised if they just tabled it for one more year, but it certainly would be at 2015 playoffs at the earliest. But I wouldn't be surprised if they even push it off a little further for more consideration.
Talking with Ben Ostro of FootballZebras.com. If you have comments about rules changes or anything along these lines, 803-0550, the number. Ben, let's get back to the rules themselves and a lot of controversy and discussion about extra points. The commissioner has decided they're boring. And the competition committee has decided that maybe they should take a look at moving the extra point try, the kick try, back to the 20-yard line. So in essence, instead of a 20-yard kick for 1 point, you'd have a 38-yard kick for 1 point. Tell me what you think of that rule and what you think the chances are of that passing.
Well, that was a Patriots proposal right there. And it would be the 1 point play, the line of scrimmage would be the 25-yard line. You could still do a 2 point run or pass from the two-yard line. So that's going to be an unusual situation where you have to kind of decide what your play is, right away, and it affects the spot of the ball. So, I'd be interested to see how that's going to play out. And the competition committee has asked that at least they get one preseason game where they have the alternate line of scrimmage for the extra point. It out in the open there in the preseason game and evaluate it. Even if that does pass, I don't see that being a quick turnaround where they do that 1 year out. I think it's another one of those, let's take a look at it, let's evaluate it. But they do want to get that percentage down. It's 99.6% that it's made and a couple of flukes here or there. So they want to get that percentage down and make it actually a part of the game.
I applaud the league for for experimenting anyway and thinking outside the box. But are we at the point where really do you really need to make that change? The league's never been more popular. I know extra points are boring, but is anybody not watching a game because the extra points are so boring?
Well, it's not boring if somebody misses the kick, that's for sure. And I think it's been a part of the game since Grover Cleveland was president. So, it's been around for a long time, and old habits do die hard in the NFL.
What about some of the other extra point thoughts out there. People talk about, you know, 7 automatic points, and then you could go for 2, that sort of thing. That's not in the, you know, in the package of proposals from the competition committee, but people have talked about that. Do you see a better way to maybe solve that problem if there is a problem of a boring play after a touchdown?
Well, I thought an interesting wrinkle would be to limit the substitution after the touchdown. In other words, just maybe 2 substitutions, your holder, your kicker, and so then you'd leave 9 players out on both sides of the ball and, you know, go to the kick with that personnel group on the field. So now you don't have the real heavy linemen on the block and on the push, you know, because you're also looking at a situation where, you know, it is a throwaway play, and what happens if you have a season-ending or a career-ending injury on an extra point kick. So I think if you have your regular offensive package out there, swap in the kicker and the holder, I think you get your 99.6% down closer to 90%. I don't think the coaches would like it too much, but it would certainly add a little bit more interest to that play for sure.
Yeah. The Patriots proposed, I don't know to what end, but the Patriots had a proposal about extending the goalposts another 5 feet higher. What is that a problem? Are the goalposts ever too short, do you think?
Well, anytime the ball goes over the goalpost, my Twitter feed explodes from everybody saying, raise the goalpost, put lasers on them, all sorts of proposals. The officials I've talked to said this is not a non-problem. They have not seen any problem with it. You look straight up in the air, and if it breaks the outside plane of the goalpost, in other words, if they see ball on the outside of the yellow, then it's no good. And there's really no problem from their perspective. The people at home that are watching from the camera angle that's 120 yards away, they think that they saw the ball go over the post and they want to see it taller. If you raise it to 35 feet, then it's still going to go over the goalpost, and you're going to, you know, have calls to raise it even further. I don't see that really getting any momentum. I mean, it's been at 35 feet since, I think, 1974. So, you know, it works. And like I said, it's a non-problem from the officiating staff.
Yeah, I agree with you. Here's an interesting proposal, and it's along the same lines, technological lines. Install fixed cameras on all boundary lines to improve instant replay. I think that's perfect. What a great idea. So you don't have that disparity between, say, a Sunday night game and a 1 o'clock game on Sunday with fewer cameras.
That's true. You know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you can add more cameras. I've heard, you know, stick one in the pylon and you'll get every goal line situation. I mean, I think it's definitely worth a shot. I really think also that any of the cameras that are there for the Jumbotron, they should be fed into not only the replay booth, but they should go into both coaches' booths. And I think that there should be the equipment where they can replay that quickly. They can get a decision quickly from the coaches' booth and say, hey, you know, there's something to challenge here. Because the TV is really not obligated to show anything close. And, you know, that kind of takes an element of the game and takes it way outside of what I think it was intended. So, you know, you get some of these late replay calls, you know, where the replay official buzzes down late because, well, you know, he just got one replay that came in kind of late. So I definitely think that more equipment could help them enhance the replay process. And to get it down all the boundaries, well, that's gonna cover a lot of the bases that are left open in some of these you know, early games during the Sunday afternoon.
We were talking a minute ago about how boring extra points are, Ben. You know what really is boring now are kick returns. And there's a proposal now to really make it ridiculous to move the kickoff line back to the 40-yard line. I mean, that would just take the kick return way out of the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it probably would take it right into the stands there. We've seen an increase in touchbacks just from the ball moving from the 30 to the 35. And in these cases, they were pretty much forced touchbacks because it just went right to the end line. It was at the 40, probably, I'm trying to think back, it was probably in the 60s that it was at the 40-yard line. But, you know, the kicking game has evolved significantly since then, and that's when it got moved back. You know, they say it's for historical and for safety reasons. I really I don't really see that hanging around too long. I think they'll dispose of that one pretty quickly.
Anything else in the package that the competition committee revealed yesterday that strikes you as a significant change that'll be voted on next week, man?
Well, I think that you have another easy one on the stoppage of a clock after the quarterback sack. They let the clock run under 2 minutes for obvious reasons, and they're going to extend that to the rest of the game. They tried that out in the Pro Bowl, and it seemed to have worked. And it seems like the reasoning behind it is old reasoning, so I think that would go. There's one that I can't really get a line on whether or not they're going to pass this one, and it's the one-yard pick zone, essentially, that any pass interference starts 1 yard from the line of scrimmage. So you have that that 1 yard area where you know either the offense can get a pick on the defender and you know get a little bit of a gap. That would move it to the line of scrimmage. So as soon as there's any contact, line of scrimmage or out, then that becomes pass interference territory. You know, there's a lot of teams that use that to their advantage, so they would probably be the ones that that voted down. And one last one that I saw was it's actually a policy change to give an option to the home team to open the roof at halftime when they have the retractable roofs, because they have to make these decisions. You know, if it's a game in the central time zone, you know, kickoff is at 12 o'clock. Their decision has to be made by 10:30 local time. And so then you get into the afternoon and it's a bright sunny day and here the roof is closed. And once the roof is closed, they can't reopen it. So this is a proposal to, and it was brought forward by the Colts, that at halftime there's an option that they could, you know, pop the top on the place if it's a nice day.
Ben Ostro has an entire website, footballzebras.com, devoted to officiating and rules in the NFL. Does it ever surprise you, Ben, there's that much content and that much interest in NFL officiating?
I was, I was just writing about the rules to begin with, and you know, it just seemed to snowball from there. The interest has just increased every year. And a lot of people think that they know what's in there. But, you know, every year there's these little things that come in here. I mean, we have 13 proposals this year. That's an awful lot. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what changes in there. And, you know, we're certainly getting a lot of interest in the changes. You know, it's only March, and people are talking about football.
Yeah, that's why we're here, Ben. Thanks very much for being on the air with us tonight. I'm glad we had a chance to talk again. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Ben Ostro is the man behind the website, footballzebras.com. Very good website, deals with all of these changes and deals with officiating, too. Even the comings and goings of NFL officials, you know, how they grade out, highly recommended. Footballzebras.com. Did I mention we're going to be there at the NFL owners meetings next week? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. All kinds of coverage coming up next week at BuffaloBills.com on these rules changes. And all kinds of coverage on the radio, too. Monday night, Wednesday night, live radio shows from Orlando, Florida. For the NFL owners meetings, we'll talk with we plan to talk with head coach Doug Marrone, GM Doug Whaley, Russ Brandon, the Bills president and CEO. We'll be there for the commissioner's news conference. We'll get you caught up on the rules changes. You can catch it at BuffaloBills.com, and we will also have a couple of live radio shows Monday and Wednesday night with a podcast coming up next Tuesday. We're here tomorrow night with a two-hour show, and among our guests tomorrow night, the newest Hall of Famer, not yet installed but getting ready to go to Canton this summer, Andre Reed. Is in town. He'll be in studio with us tomorrow night on the show. We're going to talk tomorrow night with Dave Wallaba, a Hamburg native who had a great career in the NFL with the Browns and the Patriots. We'll talk with Dave Wallaba, catch up with him, and a lot more, too, coming up tomorrow night on the show, 7 to 9 p.m. The Bills and M&T Bank are right in the middle now of their 6th annual Touchdown for Teachers contest. You can participate, but you got to get moving. The entries can be in no later than Monday, April 7th. They're looking for a teacher who is the top teacher, the outstanding educator in Western New York, based on their amount of involvement in the school or community, their degree of positive impact, and their commitment to education. If you have a nominee, go to BuffaloBills.com/teachers. Rangers, but you got to do it by Monday, April 7th. The finalists will be notified Friday, April 18th. The Buffalo Bills M&T Bank Touchdown for Teachers contest. Go to buffalobills.com/teachers for more information. That's going to do it for us tonight. Hockey coming up. As I said, we're back on the air tomorrow night at 7 o'clock with a full two-hour show right here from One Bills Drive. Hope you tune in for that. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Dave Buchanan, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. See you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, with the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.